This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network listeners. I am Jeff Hawkins, co-host of Shake Them Ropes, with a very special announcement. If it's been a while or you've never listened to us before, the original gang is back, myself and Rob McCarron. Back talking wrestling. We have no idea where this show's going to go, where we're going to keep any of the old bits or any of the old things in there. It's going to be a process. It's going to be a journey, and we'd like for you to come along with us only on Shake Them Ropes on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy, an AEW podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Network. I'm Fred. I'm going solo today. Mr. Tyler is off doing actual work while I'm taking a break from my actual work to do the show. Apologies for the inconsistent schedule recently. Basically, I am buried in work. It sucks. And it ain't gonna get better before the end of June. So if you are one of three people that like this show, apologies. It's gonna be like this for a touch longer. I am working on a special treat, hopefully, that works out next week. Going to keep that close to the vest just in case it doesn't work out, because I'm a coward. I figure this week we're just going to kind of do some quick hitter stuff, hit the news, going to talk briefly about the last couple episodes of Dynamite. I feel silly talking about the pay-per-view. Pay-per-view was great. Everyone knows it was great. It was widely discussed how great it was. I don't know that I really have much to add to that. Oddly, I mean, I thought it was really had tremendous depth, but I don't think it really had a true match of the year candidate on it. It had several that might appear like in the 10 spot, I guess, on a top 10 list for me. But I think by the year end, I don't know if any of them will be on my top 10. I understand other people feel more strongly about it. I also feel very silly that that is apparently not good enough for me to feel like it's a no doubt 10 out of 10 show. As my cat tries to climb over stuff that she shouldn't, this has been a constant theme for the day. Corporal Cuddling is engaged. I think it was a fantastic show. Now part of it is that I broke it up over multiple viewings because, again, my schedule is hell currently. But I think that if I'd sat it down, I would have felt more strongly about it being a 10 out of 10. But, I mean, it's objectively, I think, if you look at just the list of matches on it and how great those matches were, I think you'd be hard-pressed to not say it was a 10 out of 10 level show. Past couple Dynamites, I thought the first one was fine. Last week's May whatever it was, I don't know how dates or numbers work, I'm an idiot. May 27th, I thought it was perfectly fine. Very little must-see on it. If anything, I think the Mark Davis-Jack Perry match is like a low-level notebook match, 4 stars, worth your time. But I definitely don't think there was much on it that was tremendous outside of that. Some decent promos, no matches that really stunk or anything, like no disasters. That's about it for that show. As far as this week's Dynamite, June 3rd, I thought it was bookmarked by a couple very strong matches, and honestly had a couple other very good ones in between. Rush MJF, I thought, was a 4.25 star level match. Really great work there. Rush stepped up in a big spot, and MJF, say what you will about his creative at points, and God knows I have. I think he is a tremendous in-ring worker, and I think it's kind of hard to not admit that, at least. And I thought he showed it here. And I thought Mark Davis Ospreay was a really strong kind of schmoz main event. Now, this isn't going to go down as like a Matt classic, and a bunch of people freaked out when in the Observer this week at the end, Dave did give it 5.75 stars, which sounds completely insane to me, but then I reached out to Dave, that's how crazy it sounded, and clarified that that was a typo. I don't know if the proper rating is 4.75, which is, within the realm possibility, I think. That's not insane to give it. But I also get if you didn't like the match, because it was a lot of interference. And, I mean, it was, I personally am of the opinion that every once in a while you can do an Attitude Era style, like, run-in fest as a treat. I definitely wouldn't want that, like, on a weekly basis. But I don't think they've done that in a long time, so it's all right. So it didn't bother me. I thought the work was strong in between and that the run-ins were fun. You know, I enjoyed it, but again, I'm not going to quibble with anyone that didn't. So I put down 4.5 for that. I thought the Bailey Knight match was, again, a low-level notebook match, 4 stars. I would be disappointed if that is the blow-off of that storyline. Now, I don't know if they're going to do, like, pull out Joe Lanza's favorite reference here, Rick Martel, Tito Santana, where they hate each other for the rest of their lives. So, hey, look, that would be pretty cool. But I do hope that is not, like, the entirety of the storyline, that it's not just, well, Kevin Knight beat Mike Bailey on a Dynamite, and that's it. That's over. Mike Bailey is in the mid-card for the rest of his life, and Kevin Knight is moving on up. I think that would be a disservice, frankly, to Mike Bailey. He's a fantastic worker. I don't know. He's been a great promo. He's been all right the past few weeks, I feel like. Doing all right, but yeah, you know, I mean, maybe that's like the cap of his promo abilities, but yeah, I still think he's good enough that he should be a regular presence on TV and, like, something of a player at a minimum. A good TNT-level champion. Mercedes Moné returned in a pretty good match against Alex Windsor. I feel like it was a touch short and maybe left some stuff on the table, but still was a good match as the cat jumps on me again. This is the second time, in case you're keeping track. Yeah, I thought Mercedes looked nice, and so did Windsor. I thought they both had put on good performances, and it was a best women's match they've had on TV in a few weeks, I think, at least. Unless I'm forgetting something, which is entirely possible. Leo Rush, stop it. We're not doing this. I don't want this. I don't know who needs this. This is one of those things that's gonna, I think, look better in GIF form, and people will, like, retweet and be like, ah, this is storytelling or whatever, but in actuality, like, I think it sucks. And I'm a Leo Rush fan. I think he's a fantastic worker. I think he's tremendously athletic and really impressive in how he uses that athleticism, and I mean, you can still see that in this gimmick. Like, when he's doing the, for lack of a better term, I don't know how else to describe it, the bucking horse run around the ring, like, that's hard to do. It's really, you know, physically challenging, I'd have to think, to be able to do that and make it not look like crap. And I think he does that, and, you know, that's cool, but, like, the gimmick as a whole is just very kind of cringy. I don't know. Had to kick the cat out. Had enough of that nonsense. Yeah, I like this week's episode of Dynamite quite a bit. I thought it was a really good show. No thoughts on Collision, because I have not watched it. Sorry. Out of time. Beep boop. I just saw, sorry, I got distracted by a tweet which contained the text, a Chinese robot wearing a clown wig kicked a child in the stomach. And if that's not going to make you stop whatever you're doing, I don't know what will. All right. But yeah, that's kind of my thoughts on the episodes of Dynamite that have taken place the last couple weeks. I'm very excited that they're going to run Cincinnati, a place I could ostensibly go to, but don't have time to. Hooray me. Let's see. Okay, let's get on to the actual news about AEW. I think the bigger story, maybe, is that WWE is planning on running Arena Ciudad in Mexico City right before, I think it's the week before, the Anniversario show for CMLL, and the same day, they're also running NXT Great American Bash head-to-head with Forbidden Door. Because that worked great last time. I don't know why they're bothering with that. Now, maybe they will do something with the Triple A show. It's the Triple Mania. Maybe they'll accomplish something against Anniversario, because God knows they've got the knives out in Mexico now for CMLL. Because God forbid anything isn't just globalized. Anyways. But I don't know that they're going to actually accomplish what they want to with this, with running head-to-head against Great American Bash, or with Great American Bash against Forbidden Door, because, you know, last year it failed. Now maybe with it not being, with it not being the big Texas show, maybe it being a smaller show, it'll have a little bit more of an effect, but I'm really doubtful on that. And I just think they're doing a disservice to their customers, you know, those who would be interested in watching both. and not everyone's going to choose WWE in that scenario. So it just feels like, just feels really unnecessary and not beneficial even to them. So I don't get it, but that is the traditional thinking of you got to run opposition and just hurt the other people because, you know, if you're doing that, then you're definitely helping yourself. Business genius. So, scrolling past that in the Observer, just seeing if there's any other news stories. Grand Slam Mexico has been announced for August 5th in Arena Mexico. The ad apparently lists MJF, Místico, Bandido, Máscara Dorada, Andrade, and Thunder Rosa. So, you know, that should be a fun show. You know, Mick Foley, of course, debuted with the company. I swear to God, if they have him wrestle, I will not be happy, and I'll leave it like that. It is very unfortunate that that's even, like, a thing he's talking about, considering that several years ago, he talked about how he couldn't even ride roller coasters anymore because he was just getting concussions from that, which is insane. Like, that's really not good. So, buddy, don't get in the ring, you know. MJF hyperextended his knee in the Rush match, so he's had to cancel a indie day where he's going to wrestle Bobby Orlando at Beyond Wrestling on 6/5. So doesn't seem to be any like serious structural damage from the reporting early, so hopefully so it would be good to not have that title reign ruined by injury. The Butcher and the Blade's contracts have expired. It appears they're out of the company. You know, it's in the sense that it's sad to see them go. You know, I think they're both good performers. I honestly have lost track of the Blade's recovery from injury. I'm not sure if he's been able to return yet or not. So when you hear this obnoxious typing in the background, that's what that is. I thought he was, I like that tag team pretty well as like a mid-card kind of tag team. Doing good work, but they're both in their 40s, they're older. Ah, the Blade is back, good for him. But, you know, I'd love for them to get featured somewhere. I think they're a nice tag team. But, you know, I don't get really take umbrage with the decision to let them go. Frankly, I'm not sure where they would fit in, like Ring of Honor level, I guess, if you're really trying to make that a second promotion, which AEW arguably mostly is not. I guess they've been showing a few signs closer to that. But still, you know, that also should really be intended to help people, you know, develop. And these guys are late stage, you know. I mean, I think Blade's 46 and Butcher's 48, it looks like. But I always like the Butcher's work. In particular, like, the Blade's a good worker. I don't want to knock him or anything. But, yeah, I thought the Butcher was always very cool whenever he showed up on TV. So, there is a fundraiser shirt for Tenaya Brooks, a.k.a. Rebel. AEW selling it. All money, all proceeds, or profits, I think it is. Technically profits. It should be proceeds, guys. You got it big enough. Should go toward, or are going towards AOS research, I believe it is. So it's a great, great cause. Wishing her the best. And I think that's about it for AEW news, from this week. So just a little quick bit of quick hitters there. Interested to see what they're going to do as a main event for the next pay-per-view. It is Forbidden Door, so, you know, traditionally, oh, previous years, I should say, not 2025, but previous points, it was a inter-promotion show with an inter-promotion challenger, but they've really kind of moved away from that the past couple years. You know, frankly, it's been a couple years. What the hell am I talking about? So I just assume it's going to be someone. It feels like they might be setting up for, like, a multi-man, a three or four, you know, a triple threat, three-way dance or four corners match for this pay-per-view, teasing Mark Briscoe and Andrade and so on, would be a way to kind of get past multiple challengers on, you know, while also, you know, kind of passing the time until assumedly Will Ospreay gets the title shot in Wembley. But yeah, I personally just love another MJF Briscoe match. But I mean, Andrade's been on a tear, and it's really hard to fault his investment or placement in a title match. So I don't know. I'd prefer it to not be a multi-man, but I feel like it's headed that way. Is by dumb read. Mark Davis, man, has been fantastic this year. I just got to say that. I've really been impressed with his work. The pile driver is my pick for move of the year. I'm going to actually have to try to campaign for that so we don't just go with like the same, you know, the neon double jump moonsault's cool and so on. But like, you know, we got the Mark Davis pile driver is just so cool every single time. It looks like he's just killing dudes with it. It rules. I don't know how you could not love that move. All right, let's talk about two lists, and then I'm going to get out of here. First one is Voices of Wrestling's 30 Under 30 list, one of my favorite projects every year. We voted on it again, and it's come out, was announced this past week, with Saya Kamatani finishing first, which I think is honestly the best pick, frankly, from the available candidates. So she's done good work. I mean, I'm not going to say she's like Mayu Iwatani level work or anything like that, but I think she's a very good worker, you know, a great one even. And she's obviously a tremendous draw and business mover over there. Like, you know, everyone in Japan is seemingly in, if not outright free fall, but you know, they've been hurt the last couple years. You know, the yen is down, the economy over there is not great, and she, you know, most of the promotions seem to be declining a bit in attendance, and Kamatani has started on the ups, and that is impressive to be doing that in that atmosphere, in that environment. So I feel like she's a clear-cut number one. The rest of the actual top 10, and then I'm talking about my votes. Scroll. Kyle Fletcher, 2. Callum Newman, 3. Yuma Anzai, 4. Kevin Knight, 5. Mascara Dorada, 6. Miyu Watanabe, 7. Starlight Kid, 8. Number 9 is Izumi. And then finally, Jackie Kamei at 10. I feel like that's about as good of a top 10 as he can manage, really. I don't see any... First of all, I definitely don't see anyone in that top 10 that is not deserving of recognition. I apparently... I had Kamei on my ballot. I had him 7th. What am I talking about? I feel like that's a really reasonable top 10. I can't, and apparently the voting was very close. The top 3 were separated by just a couple points, and I mean, it's a good top 10. I do have a quibble with it in that I think WWE being completely out of the top 30 is flawed in that you've got Rhea Ripley, Bron Breakker, and Javon Evans, who I all think should have been in the top 30. When I voted, I had Ripley 9th, I had Breakker 13th, and I had Evans 25th. I think those three are obviously what you should be looking for in this list. Now, I'm not going to be upset about it, because God knows that every other list in existence pretty much got, you know, bends over backwards to talk about how great WWE is. And if you're like listening to this somehow and you are upset that WWE didn't get the recognition they needed, and it's because you think there's like an anti-WWE thing going on or whatever, I disagree, because, you know, voters are only going to vote on what they watch, and a chunk of the voter base doesn't watch WWE, which is fair enough. I can't fault anyone for that. I only airdrop in for the airdropping. God, parachute in. I'm really good at this podcasting thing, guys. You're making great decisions listening to me. I only parachute in to see, like, you know, recommended matches, essentially. I can't sit through a whole episode of Raw. I remember trying to watch the Netflix debut episode with Warren Hayes. And after like 2 hours, I was like, all right, I'm out. I can't do this. So yeah, it's not really a promotion that I'm terribly interested in. But Rhea Ripley is, and Bron Breakker and Javon Evans are three special talents, and I will defend them, and I think they should have been clear top 30 people. I'm not saying that, like, they should have finished 1, 2, 3, like, anything like that. That's insane. I do think it's fair to criticize WWE and mainly the output of Elise Breakker and Ripley over the past year in terms of good matches, because WWE is a promotion that doesn't care about match quality, and they don't care about having their people wrestle a lot. They actively try to avoid that, and so, you know, if you're like counting notebook matches in 2025 or 2026, there's not gonna be a lot for those guys just because of how their promotion is. Now, you can say you should adjust for that, and I guess that'd be a fair way to do things, but I think it's fair to just say, well, you know, if you want to be considered a great wrestler, you should have great matches, you should have those on a regular basis. And you know, Breakker and Ripley aren't, and Evans, I think we're already seeing him disappear a little bit, just in terms of, like, because it felt like he was having great matches regularly for a while there, and it feels like now he's main roster, and they're like, oh, we don't wrestle here. So I think that is a problem there. Not a problem, but, like, a reason why they didn't make the top 30. I will say that I think they're all no doubters, though, for me. I mean, Ripley is a high-level name in the biggest company in the world. When she is given the opportunity to wrestle with someone that's not like Jade Cargill, she puts on great matches. She has in the past. The Io Sky tag team had some very strong matches not too long ago. And, you know, it's not like her popularity or push has decreased. She hasn't fallen down the card. She's still, like, one of the top women in that company, one of the top names, period, in that company. I think that is, that should be enough to get her a top 30 spot, along with, you know, when you factor in, like, she's a good worker and, you know, she's over and all this. I thought it's clear that she should be on the list. Now, she's also in, you know, this company that doesn't like to have good matches, and so that's part of it. Bron Breakker, I think, is undoubtedly a great worker. I have had this conversation with Mike Spears before of Open the Voice Gate, and he'll say stuff like, I think his argument is basically that Breakker, he doesn't think he would excel in Dragon Gate, and so he doesn't vote for him, because he thinks he's like a system quarterback is the term he likes to use. I would have, now, I undoubtedly think there would be an adjustment period if Breakker were to leave WWE to go to, yeah, I don't think AEW would be an issue, but, like, you know, more Puro, like, kind of, you know, like Dragon Gate. We'll stick with Dragon Gate in this example. I think there'd be an adjustment period where he would struggle, but I also, you can't convince me that he would not be as good, if not better, than Gianni Vellante. And I know that Mike and Case have gushed over Vellante's 2025, since he's a part-timer with Dragon Gate. I mean, Breakker is a tremendous athlete. He's a borderline, he barely missed the NFL, essentially. Then he went to WWE because he's the son of Scott Steiner. Let's not get into how stupid it is that he's not Bron Steiner, but, you know, that's another conversation. He got overexposed a bit early in NXT when he came in. I think that kind of, he didn't look his best there, but it was about the time that he was tag teaming with Baron Corbin, of all people. I can't believe in that. It's very funny that the Baron Corbin act is what, like, really got him as a, like, I feel like was his breakthrough. So I really have a hard time believing that he would not work well in any promotion in the world. You know, there's going to be a grace period. Like, if you're taking him from straight from WWE main roster to Dragon Gate, like, I could see him having a month or 3 months or whatever that would be difficult as an adjustment. But I think that, you know, after a little bit, he'd adjust, and I mean, he's fast, he's strong, he puts on good matches. I think that he would do well, and I can't really buy into the system quarterback thing. And Javon Evans, I mean, he's tremendously athletic. He's going to be a great in-ring worker. I don't feel, I have a tremendous feel for, like, how he's going to do personality-wise. I do think there's, you know, I wrote about this, I think, in the blurb for Javon. I think there's concerns about his long-term in WWE just because he isn't the traditional WWE, like, oh, big guy, you know, main eventer. Now, maybe he's, they think he's, you know, they recognize him as good enough to overcome that, to be pushed despite being somewhat smaller and, you know, outside of the typical WWE mold. But I do think there's concern there that he's going to end up lost in the shuffle. I guess we'll see going forward. To me, it would not be a lack of ability. It'd just be a lack of, like, you know, getting kind of slotted like, I don't know, Tyler Bate or Chad Gable or, you know, at one point Dolph Ziggler or, you know, Evan Bourne, you know, to go back even further. Like, these guys that are work rate guys but just get kind of passed over for one reason or another. And I think that's a legitimate concern with Javon. But he should be a star. But I feel like it's a less clear-cut path to stardom in WWE for him than Breaker, who is already, like, borderline main eventer at points, I think. I assume the Vision has suffered another injury at some point. It's hard to keep track of who's gone out from that group. But yeah, outside of that, outside of those quibbles, you know, three guys I think should have been in the top 30. I think this is a fantastic list. I really like it. I have no problem with anyone that's mentioned in it. I think all the names listed are good. I think it's a great list, really. I'm proud of the work that they did, and I think it's worth checking out. And, you know, there's a very, very, very long honorable mention page. If you want to check out literally anyone who got a single vote, you can take a look at them and, you know, read about a little bit about almost all of them. There's a couple, I think, without blurbs, and be like, oh, okay, that person sounds just interesting. I should check them out. And I think that's, you know, that's really the funnest part of a project like this, is being, you know, made aware of people you don't know about, and having, you know, being curious about wrestling or anything in life. But, you know, this is a wrestling podcast. Being curious about wrestling is a laudable thing, and I think that you should be like that. You should be not just you know, like, accepting that, you know, what you do or don't like in a major promotion like AEW, but you should be curious about what's going on at the next level down, and then down from there, you know, as much as you can. But I just think that's a fun way to go about it. So I just think it's a lot more rewarding than just, you know, oh, I like who's in the AEW main event scene, or, you know, the WWE main event scene or whatever. Like, you know, those people are good usually, but you know, there's other things out there, and they're worth your time. And I think that's about it I have for 30 for 30. GWE, Greatest Wrestler Ever, that's concluded after all the hard work by Grimace over on the Pro Wrestling Only board and Discord. Terry Funk 1, Brian Danielson 2nd, Kenta Kobashi 3. Top 10s are rounded out by Ric Flair, Steve Austin, Gunichiro Tenryu, Stan Hansen, Rey Mysterio Jr., Bret Hart, and Mitsuhara Misawa. I think it's a very fair top 10. I mean, you could argue about, like, little things about placement, but I think that's a tremendously strong top 10. I would have liked to have seen, like, you know, Joshi representative up there, maybe Aja Kong, who was 11th, Akira Hokuto was 16th. But, you know, it's not far off. It's not that many points, so it's not a big deal. It's a pretty narrow gap between 10 and 11 there. I think the real value in these projects is, you know, it's always fun to get people with different points of view together to talk about something like this and to advocate on behalf of their favorites and be like, hey, this is why I think blah, blah, blah is great. And using that as a opportunity to, you know, again, to have curiosity about wrestling, about its history, about what footage is out there, and evaluating and seeing if you do like something. If you like Shoot Style and you haven't watched it before, I've again, my schedule has been a nightmare, but I've dug into a little bit of Marika Yoshida after she finished, I think, top 100. I think that's where I saw her. 102nd. Yeah, I pulled her up, and, you know, I watched a couple matches of hers, and I'm going to have to watch more because she kicked ass in those matches. Someone I hadn't watched before, you know, from the 90s, Joshi, I didn't really heard all that much about. So, you know, that kind of stuff, you know, pull up the list, go through it, you know, start at number one and then scroll on down until you find a name you don't recognize or you don't haven't watched that much of, and then just watch them and learn. And I saw someone, I forget who it was, and I'm not really using this to, like, call them out or whatever, but I'm just trying to make a response to a point they made. I think someone suggested that, like, people are mad about the possibility of, like, Jerry Lawler finishing a spot above Kenny Omega. And I think if you're mad about that, you need to chill out, frankly. But, you know, the PWO people are big fans of Jerry Lawler. And, like, you know, having watched a couple prime Lawler performances, I get it. You know, he's a really special performer. He's a great babyface, and he's great in that kind of Memphis-style match. That's not going to be for everyone, but at the same time, Kenny Omega's not going to be for everyone. And it's, you know, fair to watch these guys and gals and to, you know, just draw your own conclusion. I think that's a real value in it. And I think that's what you should be doing. There's nothing on here that really made me angry, with one exception. And the one thing that did make me kind of annoyed, biffed, in the voting process was when people would vote for stuff like Yoshihiko and Andre's a Giant Panda and so on. It's, you know, Ken the Box, I think someone tried to vote for but wasn't nominated. Look, I get enjoying those matches. I'm not going to pretend like I haven't enjoyed anything involving them or like Mecha Mami or whatever. But I think it's very silly in a list of the 100 greatest wrestlers to be voting for not people, or at least, you know, like, gimmicks that aren't necessarily assigned to one person or aren't, like, you know, it's a little different than, it's very different from, like, Mystico is the guy under the mask, you know, and he wrestles with the mask, but we all know who Mystico is. And it's very silly to try to compare that to, like, this is the person wearing a inflatable panda costume, you know. So I feel like that's kind of a do. There's a lot of discourse about stuff like, you know, someone voted Lulu Pencil second, and I saw Andy Kaufman got a top 25 vote. I thought the Lulu Pencil stuff during the pandemic was fun, you know, kind of a high watermark for early pandemic stuff. I think they told a very good story, but at the same time, I don't think it's that hard to evaluate Lulu Pencil and be like, ah, she's really not a good wrestler. The person's justification was that they got really invested in the storyline of Lulu Pencil, and she made them feel a certain way about wrestling, like, you know, very invested, I guess, basically. Sorry, Pete myself, for the first time, I'm sure. But that they, and that's why they voted her that high. I understand. I just think it's very silly to look at this list, you know, and come up with all these different names, and it doesn't matter what style or styles you're partial to, but whatever you're into as a wrestling fan, and to look up and down this list, and like in 1 5-person slot have Antonio Inoki, Akira Tawe, John Cena, Nick Bockwinkel, and Chigusa Nagayo, and to conclude that actually the best wrestler of all time is Lulu Pencil, I do think that's pretty silly. And same with Andy Kaufman. I think Andy Kaufman, you know, did some fun stuff and all this, but I also think it's a little silly to evaluate him and as superior to, you know, pulling name off the, you know, whoever they voted above. I forget who it was that voted for him, but like, you know, saying, and that's why he's better than Katsuyori Shibata or Keiji Muto or Io Shirai. Like, I just think it's a little silly that way to go about it. I know he was a tremendous troll doing his you know, women's champion of the world shtick and all that, and you know, the I'm Hollywood, Memphis sucks stuff, but I just think it's that's not how I would have cast my ballot. That's not how, I don't really agree with that evaluation, but you know, again, as I said before, I'll say it again. I think the fun thing is being able to see all these different people's opinions and votes, and including the tribal chief of Rhode Island. If you know, you know. Yeah, you know, it's just a fun little project, a couple fun projects. You know, just use them to broaden your horizons and have some fun with wrestling. That's kind of my big thought opinion. I speak real good. Fire me into the sun. That's just my big takeaway on the on those projects. Anyways, that's all I've got to talk about this week. I hope you all are having a great week. Look forward to talking with you the next time I can. But until then, take care, y'all. Have a good one. Be good. Talk to you later.
Wrestling Omakase brings you a full course meal of all of Japanese wrestling, men's and women's. Join me, a Japanese wrestling fan for over 20 years, along with a rotating cast of equally knowledgeable co-hosts, as we cover everything from New Japan and Stardom to NOAH, All Japan, DDT, Tokyo Joshi, Marigold, Sendai Girls, Dragon Gate, Gleet, Ice Ribbon, and even more stuff. If you're a fan of Japanese wrestling and you want coverage of the entire scene in one podcast, check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network each and every week. Get us wherever you get podcasts today.